Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I welcome to the show Michelle Rea. Michelle has been a practicing attorney in Cleveland, Ohio for 26 years, and throughout her career she has primarily represented businesses of all sizes in a variety of matters, including formation and startup, purchase and sale of businesses, contract matters, real estate purchases and leases, employment matters, handbooks, agreements, hiring, firing, FMLA, ADA, workers' compensation, unemployment, human resources issues, and so much more, things that most of us really don't want to have to deal with on our own. And for the last 18 years, Michelle has operated her own law firm, which really focuses on helping entrepreneurs set up their business entities and their relationships with their employees, their contractors, their customers, and vendors, so they're protected and in compliance with applicable laws. I don't know about you, there are so many laws on the books. Half of those don't make sense. We don't know about them. We really need somebody like Michelle to help us. And she helps her, you know, her clients by holding their hands throughout the startup process, and then often continues to serve as their legal advisor as they grow their business. As entrepreneurs and as virtual service providers, we need this information that she's going to be sharing with us today. Michelle, welcome. I'm so glad to have you here today. I'm going to pick your brain, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, we have been talking over the past week or so, and you've got some fascinating information. And before I kind of delve into picking your brain, can you tell people a little bit about yourself, you know, why you're doing the things that you're doing now? Because I know you've got this whole new business model that you're creating, and we want to talk about that. But tell people a little bit about you and where they can find you.
Well, I am starting a new online business that's going to take what I do with my clients currently in Ohio and help people in all different states as opposed to being limited in Ohio. When you're a lawyer, you're licensed in each state. So I'm currently licensed in Ohio, which means I can only represent businesses who are operating in Ohio. And I find that there are just so many businesses, entrepreneurs who are in other states that maybe don't have a lawyer that they can go to or want to generally know what this is all about and how they start a business. And I thought it would be beneficial to do kind of a program where people can learn the basics about how to start a business and operate a business in all the areas that you talked about in my bio. And then they can seek counsel and accountants in their particular state for specific questions or issues and that kind of things. But it's more of a educational as well as do-it-yourself kind of a program.
Mm-hmm. But at least once they kind of talk with you about your program or follow your program, they know the proper questions to ask.
Exactly.
And you don't
know what
you don't know. I mean,
exactly.
So where do you start?
And there are a lot of attorneys don't really explain the whole process or what the things that they need to think about. They will just say, okay, yeah, you want an LLC, I'll just file the articles of organization and you'll be done. And they don't really hold their hands. And so that's been a niche that I've developed over the last 18 years in my own practice. And really is kind of what I'm known for now is just really, I charge a fixed fee and then I hold their hands throughout the whole process. So my thought is to kind of extend that to a larger market and be able to serve entrepreneurs in that way.
And I love that idea because there, you know, as the world economy changes, as how we do business changes, there are a lot of people who are working more and more virtually. I mean, my businesses, I have two of them, and they're 100% virtual. My office is in my home. It's a very different kind of a startup process than maybe a brick-and-mortar business. And I am finding, or I'm observing rather, that a lot of people who may go into the virtual assistants industry, or you know, they're a web developer or a coder, they will just kind of launch in, set up a PayPal account, start accepting payments, and that's their business model. And then they wonder
right.
why in the heck the IRS doesn't kind of like what they're doing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Just imagine that. So there are some startup procedures that you have to do if you're going to run a successful business and not run afoul of the law or regulations.
Exactly, exactly. And you are right. The virtual industry is what caused me to kind of launch into this
mm-hmm.
piece as well. And I really wasn't aware of how extensive that was until I was looking for a virtual assistant because I don't really have staff. And so I thought, you know, I had heard about a virtual assistant, as you and I talked about. We're like,
mm-hmm.
what exactly is that term? So I Googled it and came upon, you know, that whole industry. And then from there came upon all these other businesses. And that's really, and that's been about a year now that I started exploring that. And that's kind of what caused me to then develop this new program because the fact that I see so many businesses who start with just starting to coach people, for example, but they don't really have anything that explains to the people that they're coaching on how do you actually start a business and what do you do
right.
From the
right.
beginning. So that's really, well, you know, where I'm at.
And I find this as a consultant, too, because with what I do, and we've had long talks about this, what you and I both do, we're talking with our clients, we're coaching them, we're mentoring them, we're really kind of guiding them. That's what we do. You can't just, you know, like you say, just kind of sit around and say, okay, I'm going to do an LLC and not explain to the client that now they have different tax structures. There's different things that they have to do going forward. They have to maintain the LLC. They have to stay in touch with the state. There's so many things that, you know, just because you put it in place doesn't mean it stays there. You have to actively manage it. And the
right.
same thing with the VA industry. You know, we have to literally, if you're a good VA, or in my case an online business manager, you have to be able to consult with your clients and say, okay, I'm seeing gaps in, you know, maybe your programs or your thinking. How about this? You have to actively be in their business. And it's difficult. It's difficult for a lot of people to know that they need to do this. So programs like yours, I think, are very, very needed.
Well, and to discuss that one piece of it, one of the primary reasons, the primary reason you would want to start a business and as far as start an entity, a legal entity, whether it be a limited liability company or a corporation, is to protect your assets.
Mm-hmm.
And because then that way if somebody were to sue you or if there was outstanding debt or whatever, they could only go after the assets that are in the company. And to kind of to your point that you just talked about, is even after you've established an LLC or corporation, if you don't keep up the formalities of that entity, then even though you've incorporated and you've filed with the Secretary of State, you could still be sued individually if you haven't kept up the formalities, and because they can say that you are a facade and they could do what
right.
they call pierce the corporate veil. So in other words, if you got in trouble and you weren't keeping up your formalities and somebody sued you, they could sue you as Sue Smith and also sue your company as, you know, XYZ company. And they can say to the court, you know, yeah, she had this company, but she really didn't operate as a company. She still operated individually, so that was a facade, and we should be able to go after
mm-hmm.
her own assets as well. And so that's,
you have to stay in good standing with the state.
Right, and to keep up the formalities, things like, you know, have a business banking account. On your letterhead, always have your business. On your emails, always show your business. On your checking account, make sure it has your business name, your business cards, all of that, and really hold yourself out as a business. And then when you sign any documents, whether it be an agreement with a vendor or with a client, you sign it as the president or whatever officer title you have,
mm-hmm.
so that it's clear that you're entering into this agreement as a company, not as an individual.
Good advice.
So those are the things
talking,
that a lot of people...
I don't know. You probably could see my gears going, do I do all of that? Oh, missed that one while you were talking. Oh, crud.
Right.
Let
exactly.
me add that
well,
one.
It's very,
for the most part, I think I'm good.
It's very hard, especially if you've been like a sole proprietor where you don't have a company and then you start a company, and I have a lot of clients like that. And it's hard to switch gears and to really start to remember, oh, no, my company is separate from myself,
right.
And especially when it's a one-person company. So that is hard, and I really work with my clients to make sure they do that. For example, I actually have a corporate book that I give them with their name on it and all their paperwork in it, and I even give them a little handout that says, you know, don't forget that you need to sign everything this way, and, you know, you need to take these deductions, and you need to, you know, just really to help them really think and act and feel like a company. And I find that if they, you know, most clients will listen to that. The problem is that not all attorneys or not all people get that full understanding. And so they file their articles of organization and they say, oh, I'm done. I just have to register with the
right.
state and I'm done. And really, you're not done.
No.
So you have to do all these other things.
Anytime you register with the state, you need to keep it up. I know that.
Right.
And it's a good point. I mean, so many people just don't understand the peculiarities of the law. I can't even say that word. I can spell it, by golly. You know, they don't understand how to deal with the law, and that's why you need professionals in your corner. And you need somebody who can say, okay, I'm looking at the whole picture. Here is the entire picture. Yes, you've got the LLC, but now these are the steps you take to continue to protect yourself and, you know, to not run into problems. And unfortunately, it's odd to me that people who are professionally trained and have these big degrees don't think like that. It's not at all uncommon. You know,
well,
some people
are just
technicians. They will do a piece of, they'll do whatever needs to be done, but they don't think any further than that. And those are the people you want to avoid, I think.
Well, and that is true. And that's one of the reasons why I have a little bit of a niche, is because if you go to an average firm, and again, I'm not downgrading other firms. I don't want to be taken that way. But most lawyers come out of law school and they're put into a firm and they're put into a specific department and they're told what to do and that's it. And they've never run a business and they don't really, you know, it's kind of like the politicians who never, you know, actually ran a business and yet they're telling us. But, you know, it's the same idea. People who haven't actually been in your shoes are not going to know what things to tell you because they haven't been there. Where I, since I have my
Good
own
point.
Practice, and I'm an entrepreneur myself, so I understand that piece of it, and that's, I think, what distinguishes me from other attorneys is because of that. And so, you know, I understand what is needed and how an entrepreneur is thinking. You know, even the little things like charging a fixed fee as opposed to an hourly rate, like the larger firms do. It's huge because a new person starting a business, they want to know what their costs are and they want to be able to budget for those costs. So by charging a fixed fee and knowing that they can call me and meet with me and pick my brain and get you through the whole process without having to worry about the billable hour is huge. You know, where a firm never would think about that because, again, they're not thinking like an entrepreneur. They're thinking like a business and they work on an hourly rate. So it's those little things that make a huge difference.
It does. And that leads me to my next question. When did you know that you were an entrepreneur rather than just an attorney? Because there's a distinct difference there.
Yes, there is. There is. Well, when I was in law school, I worked and went to school at night, and I was with a firm that was a business firm. And it was an excellent firm as far as, it was a smaller firm, and I learned all my business law from them because they had a lot of small businesses. But I realized early on that I was probably never going to be made a partner at that firm, mostly because of my sex. I hate to say that, but it's true, you know.
It is what it is.
Right, exactly. So I was like, you know what, I'll just do my own business. So another friend of mine and I, we were both newly out of law school. So after about a year of practicing, we started our own practice. And so that was really when I started to be an entrepreneur. Now, in the meantime, I ended up getting recruited to in-house counsel with two big companies. And after doing that stint for, you know, like 7 or 8 years, I thought, you know, I really enjoy being my own boss and doing my own thing and really helping other entrepreneurs. I have this entrepreneurial spirit. And so I went back into my own practice when I first had my children, and it allowed me to be able to work from home and, you know, kind of do both the work-life balance kind of thing. And so that's really when I did it. So it's been the last 18 years that I've been in my own practice and focused on entrepreneurs. And then this most recent development of kind of branching out of Ohio is the next kind of level of my entrepreneurship.
Now, you know, I have to ask, when did that idea occur? And how did it occur? Because here's, I'm fascinated by the entrepreneurial mind. And our audience, let's face it, are entrepreneurs. They're either in the process or they're very good at what they do. They're always seeking new advice. They're always seeking new information. That's what entrepreneurs do. And the backstory, honestly, is always what I want to hear. I mean, I always want to know, how did you get to where you are right now? What was, you know, what? Where did you discover this passion? Where did you say, okay, I'm not going to just be an attorney and have these great clients and I'm doing okay, but yeah, I am going to branch out and go do something completely different, which should be scary, but it doesn't seem like it was for you. So do you mind sharing a bit of that story?
No, not at all. I'm sure as everybody in the audience can relate, as sometimes you get kind of bored with what you're doing, or you feel like you've been doing it a long time and you're not. And it's funny because I remember when I was first a lawyer, one of the senior partners in the firm that I was at originally, he said, you know, you don't really feel like you're a seasoned lawyer until you're about 15 years out. And I remember him saying that, and sure enough, like about 15 years was when I finally was like, ooh, I actually do know what I'm talking about, you know, not always second-guessing myself. And so at about 15 years, I was feeling comfortable in what I was doing, and then in the last, I would say, maybe 5 or 6 years, I had a couple major life crises in between there, and that kind of made me rethink things, and I realized that, you know, there just wasn't enough hours in the day to do the work that I do and to make enough money that I need to support my family. And so I started looking at other options. And that was when I was looking at the VA, and I thought, geez, there's a virtual assistant. Well, maybe there's a virtual law firm. So then I went out and I saw virtual law firms. And then I started, and then I got, you know, like Laura Langmire's book on The Millionaire Maker. And then I, you know, came upon Abraham Hicks and The Law of Attraction. And it was just kind of all evolved. And I came upon, they do a lot of webinars, as I'm sure you all know, a lot of free webinars about how to start businesses and how to, not start businesses, but how to coach and do all these things. And I kept thinking, boy, you know, really that's what I like more than anything else, anything more than actually doing the paperwork, is really just helping people get their businesses going and really doing more of the coaching end of that and the advising end of that and the less of the paperwork end. And so I came upon Melanie Strick, Benson Strick, through one of the webinars, and she had a program called Money DNA, and that helped to kind of focus what my real desires were and how to rethink money. And
I took
then
that course.
I know, you said that's great.
I did. And let me tell you, it was
helpful.
An eye-opener. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I remember, like, you go all the way back, and
I did.
When I went all the way back, the key with my money one, and this kind of goes along with what I just said about not being a partner in that firm, is the partner in that firm, when I came out of law school, they wanted to pay me like nothing. And I had 2 degrees at that point. And I remember standing there talking to him, and he said, well, you know, you're in a small firm, and, you know, you're just a woman, and you're not going to be able to, you know, get more
just
than that.
Just a
and
woman?
I,
he actually
yeah,
said that? Just a woman?
Yes. And,
wow.
And I said, and he said, you know, that's just, you're just going to have to, you know, accept that fact, and this is all we can, you know, do. And I came out, and then I had friends who were in other firms that were similar, guy friends, who were all making like $10,000 more than I was. And I was like, you know, this is crazy. This is just wrong. But I remember that, and what's interesting is that when I went through that Money DNA program, when she takes you through and helps you figure, that was really the piece that kept in my head, kept me down thinking, oh, I'm never going to be able to make more. I can't charge more. You know, I can only charge a lesser amount because, you know, I'm a woman and I work from home and people don't want to pay more because I don't have this big firm. And, you know, so you start to, and I realized that I had been holding myself back because of that statement that I didn't even remember until she brought me back to that. So it was quite... So I'm sure you had a similar experience with going all the way back kind of a thing.
I did. Do you know what I actually did, you know, with this program? And if anybody's listening wants to know what we're talking about, look up Melanie Benson Strick, S-T-R-I-C-K, on the Internet, and take her Money DNA program. It, you know, I do fine. I'm making money. I enjoy what I do, but I would always kind of hit my own glass ceiling, which was stupid. You know, somewhere along the line, I imposed my own glass ceiling. And like you, I was told, because I'm in an industry, I'm in the tech industry, I have a computer science degree. I was told, look, you know, there's not that many women in this industry. Good luck to you. Really?
Of course,
I don't take being told no very well. So, but and, you know, I just took off and did my own thing. I never have worked. You know, I took my computer science degree home, and I've never worked for anybody else. And I just created my own business around it. But all that being said, I took that program, and you know, I'm a high functioning workaholic. I'm always in front of my computer. I'm always doing something, and I had to force myself. Literally force myself to print that program out and take it outside to my bistro table in the backyard and sit with it for hours so I wasn't distracted. And I want you to know, I mean, there were a couple moments I remember. Yeah, I was just writing. It was almost like free writing at one point. And I remember sitting back a couple of times in complete shock. I didn't remember. I was like,
yeah,
really?
It's amazing what...
It's an important program. If you don't know your money DNA, you're probably not going to do as well as you should. So there's my plug for Melanie Benson's trick. So.
Well, and the second plug for her is that I then retained her as a business coach. Because, and again, and many of your listeners may be able to relate to this. You know, I thought to myself, well, I don't need a business coach. I mean, I'm coaching other people.
You do.
Why would I need a business coach? You know, and it took all these years, 26 years, I finally thought, you know what, I've never put really any money into my practice as far as, you know, resources outside of what I do other than an accountant. And I thought, you know, I'm really, in order to get to this next level and create this other program, I really feel like I need that. And she's been great as far as helping me to figure out what kind of program to do and what exactly would, you know, just really reinventing myself kind of a thing. So, again, I strongly recommend a coach, a business coach of some sort. And then, as you know, she recommended you for the marketing piece of this. And this is a good point for your listeners as well, is, I mean, even once you figure out what your business is and you get it set up, you know, then you have to figure out how do you actually market it. And, again, I thought,
yeah,
well, I could use my daughter, I could use my friend, you know, whatever.
No.
And Melanie's like, no, you really need a team that knows what they're doing. And so that's when you and I came together. And, I mean, I feel so much better. It's like a load off my mind. You know, this way I can focus on what I do and let you focus on what you do, you know. And just like you go to an accountant because you don't want to do your taxes or you don't know how, it's the same idea. And the law is the same thing. I mean, people need to say, you know what, I really don't know all the laws and I really can't do it. And it's much easier if I at least know what's out there, what I need to be worried about, what I need to know, and then you get help when you need it, but at least you are aware and you're making an informed decision about how to, you know, make sure your company's in compliance.
And that's exactly right. And like I said at the top of the show, you don't know what you don't know. So anytime you can work with somebody who says, okay, I may not be able to practice in your particular state, but I can sure lead you in the right direction. And I can give you the information that you need to go forth and hire your accountant and hire your attorney and, you know, get those documents that you need and, you know, just ask the proper questions. Just as a for instance, people will come to me like you, you know, somebody will say to them, well, you need a VA. What the heck is a VA? And then they come to me, they have no more clue than a baby in a swaddling blanket what to ask me. So if I'm not able to look at their business model and look at what they're doing and kind of guide them to ask me the right questions, I'm no good to them. And the programs that you're putting together are very much like that from what I can see, because I've looked at your programs and, you know, you're basically guiding people to say, you know, this is what you need to be aware of. Now, these are the steps that you need to take to make sure that you are where you need to be in your business at any given time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you are right. I mean, it's, you don't know what to ask if you don't know about it. Just
no,
like I didn't know the whole virtual industry existed until I checked it out.
Right.
You know? And then once you find it and you realize, oh, my gosh, there's all these things I need to know or understand. And some of it may not apply. Like, for example, a single-member LLC versus a multi-member LLC. is a lot different and has different requirements. So are people who have staff versus people who don't have any staff, people who are using contractors versus employees, those are all mm-hmm. very different. And so, you know, you might be able to, my thought is you go through my program, for example, and at least you would know, okay, if I hire an independent contractor, I need to have this agreement because the IRS could say otherwise that they're an employee. Or if I have an employee, mm-hmm. I need to make sure that I, you know, have an application, an employment application, and that I've filed for the, you know, new hire laws or workers' comp or whatever, unemployment, right. you know, any of the payroll type things that need to be done. And in some cases, if you're small enough, you don't have to. So you need to know kind of those different things. And each state is slightly different, but they're all basically the same concepts. And that's my goal, is to at least bring people to understand what those things are that they need to be aware mm-hmm. of, and then they can check within their own state or with their lawyers right. as to whether it applies to them.
It's very much needed. By the way, to our audience, if you can hear buzzing in the background, Michelle has got some... What siding is being applied to your house? Is that
yes,
what's going on?
Yes, I apologize.
Yes.
I have no room no, in my house to go except the basement, and you could still hear it.
Yeah, I could hear it, but look, I'm one of those people that if you click a pin more than three times, I want to rip it out of your hand. So I don't know how you're coping with it. I would be standing in the middle of the room going, ah.
I'm ready for them to be done, yes. Today hopefully is the end.
I bet. Well,
we had a lot of hail and things.
Time. Oh.
We had a lot of hail in the area, and so I had some hail damage, so that's why.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, it doesn't bother me, but I just want people to know it's not just a weird sound on our radio show. It is work being done. So,
right.
So tell me what else that, what other steps that did you take to get to this point? I know you hired a business coach. You took the Money DNA program. Now you're working with us. We'll be building out your websites and your products and your social media marketing. What other steps did, how long did it take you to just kind of do this and make this decision?
I would say it took a year to get to this point.
That's not bad.
Yeah, I would say a year. I mean, I think maybe it was a year and a half ago that I came upon the whole virtual industry. And then continued to dig deeper and deeper and understand it more and more. And then throughout the last year, I mean, I literally, since I work from home, I have two monitors and I don't have anybody looking over my shoulder. So I will mm-hmm. oftentimes put a webinar on my one monitor, you know, and be working on my other monitor. And so I have sat in on tons and tons of webinars about all different things, you know, how to build your list, how to market your product, how to, you know, how to, the whole law of attraction, how to get to a vibrational level so that you're positive and, you know, all of that stuff. And so that mm-hmm. all went on for probably about, I don't know, 8 months or so, 8 months or a little longer. And then that's when I found, I think, Melanie's program in January of this year. I took her program. And then I've been doing the business coaching for the last couple months. So, and, you know, I still have some ways to go with getting everything kind of up and live. But, you know, I'm hoping to have everything up and live in within the next month or so, a couple months, I guess. October 1
that's
is
that's our target. Yeah.
So, and if possible, it might be a little sooner.
Oh, I think so. I think we can get it up and running. I'll be nagging at you, just so you know.
Yes, and that's a key. That's key, too. I mean, I don't know, at least for me, maybe not other people, but I needed to have, and that was why the business coach was such a big piece of it, is, you know, I needed somebody to kind of be prompting me and giving me mm-hmm. deadlines. And she obviously wasn't, like, on my back, but by just knowing somebody is waiting for information, that really keeps me going. And again, I think that helps, because otherwise you tend to just kind of go off on a tangent. Or I was talking to Melanie the other day, and I said, you know, I keep having doubts, like, really, will anybody really want my program? Or, you know, is it really going to be okay?
Will. Trust me.
But, you know, but in your head you have these doubts. And she suggested, and I thought that was, you know, is that you really, like, when you get a doubt, you think, really, what, you know, why do you have that doubt, and how can mm-hmm. you find evidence to say that it's not really a real doubt. And so there's things like that that you still always have to keep working through. But having somebody with you helping you, it really gives you that added comfort level that you wouldn't have if you're doing it on your own.
Oh, I agree. I have a business coach, and at one point I had two business coaches. And I'm like you. People say, well, you are a coach, you're a mentor, you're a trainer, you do all these things, why do you need a coach? Are you kidding? I'm like, I need some. And that's the short answer. The long answer is just basically what you said. We, as entrepreneurs who work from home, it's very easy to get kind of sucked up in a vacuum. We don't really see a lot of people. We're always working. We're always working for other people. I don't know about you, but I feel like the cobbler that can't take care of his own shoes. My stuff, even though I like to think that I'm my own best client, often my stuff gets done at midnight, which is just way too darn late. So, you know, I mean, it gets done, but it gets done after my client work gets done. So I have a business coach who, her job, honestly, is to keep me on task. And I told her that. I said, look, I am paying you to be mean to me, make me do these things. And she just laughed that, you know, I'm smart enough and you're smart enough and we can talk ourselves out of anything. We can talk ourselves into anything and then back out of it. And we do need sometimes somebody to say, where's your homework?
Right.
Did you do this? So, and you're right. I mean, when you have that person who's expecting you to do what you said you were going to do, you feel real crummy if you didn't do it.
And I think your listeners should know. I mean, I felt like it was a weakness to have to go to a business coach. Like, really?
Me too.
Why can't I fix this
out
myself?
Yeah.
And most of us type A personalities, you know, are like that. We feel like, oh, we should be able to do this ourselves. And so, yeah, so I give people that advice that, you know, don't feel that way because after you do it, you realize that that really is not the best way to think and that it really is worth the money and it's worth the effort, and you know, there's no way I could have gotten to where I am without that. So I strongly recommend it. Keeping you on task, like you said, is a key. But also, I don't know if you've ever gone to like a counselor for personal business, you know, like a psychologist or whatever. I mean, it's funny, you know, when I was going through my divorce, for example, I did it. And I remember thinking, well, I did all the talking, and she didn't say a word, but she always said one or two things that would make me view something in a different way, and I'd walk out with a whole different perspective. And it's the business coach is the same way. You know, even though you think you know what you want to do and how to do it, the business coach or any of these programs will make you think, gain one or two extra things that you didn't think of or help you to look at it in a different perspective.
That's absolutely right. And I resisted it for the longest kind of time. Number one, the money, it can get expensive. Number two, just thinking that I knew it all, which I do. I really don't. I like to think I do. And it was like, I was like, he's like, really? I don't need a coach. I know all this stuff already. But then on closer examination, I realized that what I knew wasn't getting put into practice. So now what? Yeah.
Right.
Let me ask you this, though, Michelle. Do you journal?
I'm not a good journaler, no. I have to admit,
you know what?
No.
I journal all the time, but I don't. I'm a nerd. You know, I've got a computer science degree. It has to have a keyboard attached to it, or I'm not interested. But I found years ago, I found it's a digital journal. I think I paid $49 for it. And that was a one-time thing. It's digital. It resides on my computer. I can log into it every day. It's fantastic because I can type. I don't have to sit and write, which is laborious for me. You know, it's just I think so fast that writing is really almost painful for me because I can't get it down on paper quick enough. And, you know, I can go into my journal, which has been on my computer for many, many years now, and I can do keyword searches. I can search by date. I can search for images. You can put images in there. It's an amazing tool for me because I can go back in there and go, I've had this idea before. Why didn't I act on it? Was the timing not right? Did I get distracted? What happened? Or, well, that idea was a bad idea. Glad I didn't do anything with that one. But it's an amazing tool for me to go back and see where I was 5 years ago or 6 months ago and just say, good job, or really, Denise, what the heck were you thinking?
Right.
So I kind of recommend that everybody just do a digital journal and keep track of what you're doing.
What, do you just Google digital journal and something will come up, or do you know what program do you have?
Yeah, it's davidrm.com, davidrm.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I'm telling you, when my computer failed last year around Christmas time, I was in a snit, not because of all my client files on there, because they're protected, they're backed up. I was scared to death. I was going to lose my journal. And I darn near did. I was like, make sure you get the journal off of there, because there's a lot of important information in there, projects that I've, thought about, personal experiences that I've experienced and don't want to do again, personal experiences that I loved, pictures of my cats. I mean, just pretty much everything about my life is in there, and I did not want to lose that.
Well, and that's interesting that I guess I don't journal, but during the Money DNA program and during some of these, kind of this personal growth thing that I've had over the last 8 months, I did write down different things, like, what my goals were and what I wanted.
Right.
And that stuff. And I have, and you're right, I have looked back at them and I've seen, I had the same thing all the time. And so that's kind of how I discovered the passion piece of this. And that, really coaching or advising, I should say, not coaching, but advising people is really more my passion. And so that did come about by doing repeated, like every week we had different exercises and doing all that. So that was equivalent to journaling. But I'm like you, I'll write notes on my computer under my notes of different things that would be equivalent to journaling, but I don't do it on a consistent basis. But this might be a great idea, because I do need to put
things
in writing. It helps
it's
me
very, very
process.
Helpful. Right.
Yeah.
And I do the same thing. I have sticky notes on my computer. I mean, the digital sticky notes. And I'll have documents here, there, and yonder. And then I think, where in the world did I put that? Where was that random thought? Because I always have random thoughts that are sometimes actually brilliant. So I have notepads all over my house. And at the end of the day, I will go to my notepad and I'll tear off that top sheet, whatever room it's in. And I will take those 4 or 5 pieces of paper. Because, sometimes I'll have a thought, I don't have time to get across the house to my computer. So, I just scribble it down. At the end of the day, I will take those random thoughts and I will put them into my journal. Or if it's something that needs to be acted on, I will put it into my calendar. It's a pretty amazing process, because what I found out, I think, and you went through this too, is that I was having kind of the same conversations with myself over a period of time. And, I will recount, like the other day when we had our great talk. I wrote it down in my journal. We had this great talk about this. We're going to be doing that. I can go back and look at those and go, that was cool. And then I can also collate those things and find out how many times I consulted with someone where I was just on fire. The other person was on fire. We had a great time. We had a great meeting in the minds, and find out that that's really where my passion is.
Right. I like the fact that you can do searching within it.
Yeah.
Like you said, that really helps, because when you do a hand journal, you don't have that ability. So.
You can't do that. You can't. And
that's good.
People have given me diaries over the years, and I still have them. They're in little boxes. It's like, thank you. It doesn't suit me. My brain works too fast.
Right.
But
right.
A digital journal is, it's not just a journal. It's not just a dear diary. I use it largely for business. Because that's just how my brain works.
Mm-hmm.
But I have found over time it has been an amazing tool to either keep me on track or allow me to go back and say, hang on a second, I was going to do this program. What happened to it? And here's the thing. I'll think, that was just 6 months ago. It was 5 years ago.
Right.
So
I know.
It's embarrassing to find out what you thought of that you're still thinking of that you didn't act on.
Right, exactly. And, along those same lines, in the process that I was going through to come up with my program, I, came up with a lot of different ideas. And then through the process, or through investigating online, or through the coach, or through the webinars I listened to, I was able to continue to kind of redefine and revise and scale down or scale up, whichever the case. But again, I had written those notes down about the different ideas I had, and then kind of cut and pasted and tweaked and so forth. So again, that, you know, that helped with that regard too. And when you're trying to figure out how to kind of move forward, one thing that you might, when you were talking about your losing or having a computer issue and the backup, I don't know what you use. I use Carbonite backup, and it's nice because it backs up like every 15 minutes, and it's really reasonable, once a year fee, and it, and you just tell it what things you want backed up. And so, like, you could put, you know, your personal notes could be one of the things that you tell it to back up. And, and it's really reasonable. They have different levels, and they have one for small businesses like myself and like you that, I don't know, was like $59 a year or something. Really reasonable. Right. And you can access
it. Yeah, I have a backup,
forever.
Too.
Well,
yeah, at the time, I had my backup. Yeah,
I was
using
those hard, you know, the
where they take
external drive.
Yeah.
Well, I was using the external drive ones. This one's nice because it's all just done automatically over the cloud, and then like I can even access it when I want to, even just to change a document or whatever. I can access it, and so if I'm, you know, if I'm off site and need to grab a document, I can do that. So I'm not, and I'm not connected to Carbonite at all. I'm just throwing it out as an extra.
But, and I also use Dropbox a lot. You know, I cleaned up. I have a very bad habit. I'm like you. I have multiple monitors. I have three, actually. And I have a really bad habit of just creating a folder, dumping a bunch of stuff in it, and then it lives on my desktop. And after a while, that slows your computer down. It clutters up the desktop. It's just very messy. So I spent, two or three days ago, I spent most of the day, this is embarrassing, most of the day moving all of these random files off of my desktop into Dropbox, and some of them had gotten so obscenely huge that it took hours. I mean, hours and hours. So I finally got it done. But yeah, I mean, you know, get as much stuff off your desktop as you can. And
one thing
you're right about having a backup. I mean, you really do have to have some kind of a backup.
And the other thing you need to be concerned about from a legal standpoint on Dropbox is that it's not encrypted, and it's not really, you know, it's still a public area to some extent. So, like, I don't use Dropbox that much because of the confidentiality pieces of my clients. But everybody should know that, too, that whenever you are looking at different programs, depending on what kind of business you're in, you may want to also double-check the confidentiality piece of it and make sure whether it's encrypted or not, or if there's a way to protect from others getting that information.
Yeah, good point. My client-sensitive documents do not go there, but things like themes and templates and, you know, just oddball documents, a lot of graphics, that all goes over there, but nothing at all sensitive that could be hacked into. I'm very aware of that.
Right, but a lot of people don't recognize that, so that's just another, you know, another thing to be aware of.
Yeah, good point. Okay, so what else did we want to talk about? I know you have a ton of things, and you know, I keep interrupting you. So what kind of points do you want to make to our audience that, you know, maybe they should be looking at when they're setting up their business? Do you have any kind of, you know, actionable tips and advice that can help them now?
Yes. I mean, I think if you're not sure what kind of entity that you want, you do need to understand that there are different kinds. And a limited liability company is one that doesn't have as many formalities. And it has a document called an operating agreement, which kind of spells out how the company is going to be operated. And you can either be a single member LLC, which is actually you file that kind of an entity on your tax return like you do as a sole proprietor. So if you, for example, if you've had a business and you've been filing all your income and your deductions on the Schedule C of your tax return, you could still do that and still have the limited liability. You could still be a company and still do that. So that's kind of a nice feature of a single member LLC. When you have more than one member, it becomes a little bit more complicated from a tax standpoint, but the point is that, you know, you would have less formalities than like a corporation. A corporation, you know, has shareholders and then directors and officers. And back in the day, I was just telling one of my clients, you know, back in the day when I first started practicing, we only had what they called an S-corp and a C-corp. And a C-corp is kind of what the big companies that you all have seen, but S-corp is what most small businesses were. And so let's say a client would come to me and say, I want to be an S-corp. and they were the only member, or maybe there were just two of them. Well, then they end up having to elect themselves. Well, they become the shareholders, and then they have to elect themselves as the directors, and they have to elect themselves as an officer every year, which is kind of crazy.
Oh.
We're re-electing ourselves, right?
Right.
And so you had to keep up this formality every year in order to make sure your company was in compliance. And then the states started, a bunch of different states, Delaware I think was the first one, started coming up with this thing called a limited liability company. And that basically looks and acts like a partnership or sole proprietor, but it has the limited liability to protect your assets. So the nice thing about it is that you can operate on a more informal basis, as far as you don't have to elect yourself an officer or, you know, director. You're just the owner and you can operate it the way you want, but you get the protection as far as nobody going after your personal assets. So as lawyers, we love the LLCs because they make so much more sense from a legal standpoint. And
right.
from a tax standpoint, there was a lot of issues when they first came out, but nowadays most accountants are pretty much in alignment with the fact that the LLC is one of the primary entities that we go to. There are a few tax nuances that I'm not going to get into, but where, you know, for some reason or another, it doesn't work for everybody. But most consulting companies, most individual companies, most real estate companies, those are all pretty much usually LLCs. So that's one piece of advice, is that you really need to kind of look at that and understand and talk to your accountant about what works for you from a tax standpoint. And then once you decide your entity, the other first step is to file your articles of organization or incorporation with the Secretary of State. And again, if you can either wait and take my program, or you can talk to an attorney and have them file that. Some of them you can do online. There are some states that it's very easy to do it online, but like I mentioned before, is just filing the articles is not enough. And so you do need to actually go to an attorney or get information about the next step, which is creating the operating agreement or the code of the bylaws, et cetera, to make it really an officially operating entity.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's the other piece of that. And one thing I would recommend is to stay away from letting your accountant do it. And because accountants technically are only legally allowed to help you file the articles of organization, to do the other documents like the operating agreement and some of the other formation documents would really be practicing law without a license. And so most accountants will just file the articles and that's all they'll do. And people think, oh, well, my accountant already filed them. And again, you need to do those other steps. So it's important that if you have an accountant helping you with that, that you still go to an attorney or at least find out the other documents like the operating agreement that need to be done as well.
Great. Excellent, excellent information. Here's a quick question somebody just sent me. They're a brand new VA. They're broke. I mean, that's what she says in the email. I'm broke. I can't afford to do any of this. What steps should I take to protect myself while I'm building my business? I hate to hear a VA say she's broke. That didn't sound good.
Well, you know, in all honesty, I mean, I will tell you that you legally don't have to. You can operate as everybody probably knows. I mean, you can operate as a DBA, so you're Sue Smith operating as virtual assistant 101, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no legal requirement that you be incorporated or otherwise. So this particular VA, for example, if she doesn't have the money right now, she could operate as a DBA and not have all those legal costs as far as forming an entity. Yes, her personal assets would be at risk, but if she doesn't have any assets, then it doesn't really matter. So in other words, if you have assets to protect, then obviously you want to make sure you have a legal entity behind you. If you are startup, you don't have much money, you live in an apartment, you know, all you own is a car, well, you know, and I literally have told clients that, I mean, you know, obviously most lawyers want to take the money and run, right? But no, I mean, I've said to them, listen, you don't really need to do it right now. You could really operate just fine until you start to really get some money and you have some assets and make it worthwhile. Now, some people, even when they don't have assets and even if they don't have a lot of money, they still want to have that formality behind them because it looks better and it feels better. And I certainly, of course, would prefer it that way from a legal standpoint. I prefer that you be formed as a legal entity. But you can truly operate without it if you really feel you can't do it.
Right. Now, the next question is going to be, how do you set up a DBA?
You don't actually have to do anything for a DBA. You can, in some states you do, so I'll take that back for 1 second, but technically you can go out and market yourself whatever you want. I mean, you can make up any name, you can do whatever you want. What the part that the registration piece of that is, if you want your name to be protected and you want to actually have, you know, people not steal that name, then you would want to file what's called a fictitious name or a DBA or trade name, depending on the state, with the Secretary of State. But as far as actually doing business whatever way you want, you don't have to register with anybody. I mean, you do have to get, like, a vendor's license if you're selling products. You'd have to get a, you know, occupancy permit if you're in a if you have a lease and you're in a building. I mean, there are other requirements as far as that piece goes. You still want to get a federal ID number. But as far as actually registering and being a legal entity, there's not a whole lot for you to do.
And see, that was my next question. I'm glad you brought that up, EIN. A lot of new VAs and a lot of new entrepreneurs operating under their own Social Security number. What would you advise them, Social Security number or EIN?
You legally don't have to get an EIN, but most people will because they don't want the whole world to know their Social Security number.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a limited liability company or a corporation, then you really have to get an EIN to be distinguished from yourself. But if you're a DBA, a sole practitioner doing businesses, whatever, you could operate under your Social Security number. Because it's all being, you're going to file all your income under your own Social Security number. But by having an EIN, at least it keeps your Social Security number more private. And when you go to file in your tax return, you're just going to show your company on your Schedule C, you'll show your company's EIN. So it doesn't mess up your taxes in any way. But it would be beneficial to get a separate one for privacy purposes.
Oh, I agree. And I found that out very early on because, you know, I'm an affiliate for a lot of different things. And they would always, when you're filling out the affiliate agreement, so to speak, they would ask for your Social Security number. I'm like, I'm not giving you that. So I got an EIN very early in the day just to keep that private.
And a lot of companies will require you to fill out a W-9 in order to, because they're going to send you a 1099 for the services that they paid for, and so they're going to want a W-9, and again, you have to show either your Social Security number or your EIN number. And you can get an EIN pretty easily. You just go on to the IRS.gov website and make sure you go to .gov and not .com. .com is a private company, and I would not recommend giving them any information about yourself because you're going to, on that form, you're going to have to do your address and your own Social Security number and all your information. So make sure you go to the government site, and that's irs.gov. I think they're open like 7 a.m. to like 10 p.m., and you can do an online application. And at the end of the process, you get your EIN immediately.
Right, and that's exactly what I did. Now, I want to touch on something you mentioned earlier, which is having separate bank accounts. I know a lot of VAs and web developers, and those of us who provide virtual services, go through PayPal. It's easy, it's free. You know, well, it's not when you get the money, they take their fee out, but PayPal is used a lot. Mine goes into my business account. I immediately established a business account, and I think you recommended that already, correct?
Yes, I definitely recommend it so that you're not commingling your funds. And again, it helps to establish you as a separate entity from yourself. And when I first practiced, I was not a separate entity. And because in law, I mean, I really can't protect my assets. If somebody sued me for a malpractice, our personal assets are on the line. So I didn't actually incorporate for quite a while. And a lot of lawyers don't for that reason. And some other professions like accountants and nurses and that stuff, they also don't because of that. But so as a result, I was not necessarily always keeping my personal and my other fees separately. But by putting it in separate accounts, it helps for tracking purposes. It helps to establish you as a separate entity. It helps to remind you that you're a separate entity. You know, I mean, so even if it's not legally required, it is just more prudent to do that.
Right. Another question just came through. I'm a VA. I do have my business account. I transfer money from my business account. I go online, I transfer money from my business account to my personal checking, but I'm not paying myself a paycheck. Can you advise about that?
Yeah, and she's a DBA, did she say?
No, she didn't say. Just that she has
okay.
a business account, that she transfers money from the business account to her personal, but doesn't treat it like a paycheck, apparently.
Right, and that's okay. You can do that. It's not a problem. What you just have to do is make sure at the end of the year when you with your accountant is that you show, you know, how much you took, because then he or she will show that as kind of your salary.
Okay.
And that's okay. I mean, if you're a small business person, you can take your salary, so to speak, in any form and at any point you want. It's usually when you have partners and a more formal entity with other shareholders or partners that you have to be concerned
mm-hmm.
about that.
But yeah,
you have
even
to make
if
sure
you're
your
an LLC,
knows.
I mean, how about if same scenario, but she's an LLC?
Doesn't matter. If she's a single member LLC, she can do that. She just has to account
okay.
for it at the end of the year.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, and there's two, some accounts will have her, would actually prefer that you set yourself up on kind of a payroll or an informal payroll where you do take certain amounts. But some accountants will say, you know, it's fine, just take it, and then at the end of the year we're going to say you took, you know, $30,000 as your salary.
Mm-hmm. Ow. Yeah, I get where you're going. Did we miss any high points? Can you believe this hour is about up? We've got 4 more minutes. And I know that you've got other things to share, so is there anything that I neglected to ask or you'd like to add?
No, other than the other big piece, like we talked about a little bit, is, you know, make sure that you get your proper licenses. If you are selling products, you have to get a vendor's license, and the vendor's license then tells the state that you're selling products, and you then usually have to collect tax. Certain services have to tax their services. Mm-hmm. Consulting in most states is non-taxable right now, but like, for example, in Ohio, they are considering taxing lawyer services. So you do have to be careful and make sure, and you can go online to your Secretary of State Department of Tax, and they'll usually say which services are taxable, so you can kind of look
mm-hmm.
that up. And if it is a taxable service, then you have to get a vendor's license, and then you have to turn over the tax to your state on a quarterly basis. And then you, like I said, you want to always have business insurance. If you don't have business insurance, especially if you have equipment, even if it's in your home, business insurance is very cheap, and you can go to your homeowner's insurance person and say, listen, I have a business out of my house. I want to protect the equipment, and I want to protect in case somebody comes into my house to do, you know, I see somebody in my house for a meeting or whatever. Or even if I'm driving, I don't want somebody, if they know that I'm on a business call and they try to sue my company in addition to myself. So you want to make sure that you have liability and property insurance. It's called business insurance. It's fairly easy to get, and it's not that expensive. And also, you could also put, if you don't want to do true business insurance, you can put an umbrella on your home to cover the business. Because if an insurance company finds out that your equipment was business and you didn't have an umbrella or business insurance, sometimes they will exclude that from your loss if you were to have a fire or something like that.
I have to tell you, you just told me something I did not know. I had
most
no clue.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's
these are the kind
information.
Of things that, I mean, it's amazing to me, and that's kind of why I'm doing this program, is because it's amazing to me how many people don't get that big picture of all these different things. And again, I can only say that the reason is that, you know, most advisors are only advising in their own little area. So the lawyers are just advising on the incorporation piece, and the insurance people are only advising in insurance, and, you know, the HR person's only advising on HR. And there's not that many, and I'm not trying to toot my horn, but I found it to be so amazing that there are not that many people out there like me who has kind of had their hand in all the different things. Like, for example, I did HR stuff in the law department at 2 big companies, so that's why I have an HR background. You know, I'm well aware of the insurance industry just from kind of being in my own business. And, you know, so all these different things, and it's amazing that there are not more people who have kind of touched in all these areas, and that's why
mm-hmm.
I feel like it's important to, you know, to get out there and to help people to put it all in one package as opposed to in piecemeal.
Right. Listen, I've got a couple of really great questions in the chat room, and it's from Sue Kramer Harrowood, who has also been a guest. Do you mind if I bring her in and let her ask you?
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay, we're about to run out of time, so I need to bring her in right now.
Okay.
Sue, are you there?
I am. Can you guys hear me?
Hi.
Yes.
We can. Go ahead. You've got some great questions. Ask away.
Hey, Michelle, and this is something I've been working on for a couple of years. As you may know, there are a lot of VAs out there using what we call blanket contracts. Maybe they got it from another VA, yada, 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 which is not the best thing to do. However, we're having a hard time finding VA, quote-unquote, friendly attorneys that get our industry so they can write just a simple contract and also charge a VA that's, you know, that works for a VA, you know, whether new or seasoned, but a lot of them are the newbie VAs. Do you have any colleagues that, you know, across, because we know it goes across state lines, that you know, I could put a list together of, hey, if you need a contract, you know, reach out to this attorney or that attorney, this is what they're going to charge, or give them a ballpark. Do you have any help for us in that area?
You know, I don't actually have, you know, attorneys in each state or whatever that I can recommend. But one thing I would say is that it's funny that you said that, is because when I first started looking into this virtual practice, what I originally was going to do was just create a bunch of different contracts, because that's kind of one of my strong points is writing contracts. I do a lot of them. And I would do that, exactly what you're talking about. I would create a document for my clients as a template that they could just tweak for each client that they have. And people love that, and I would charge them a fixed fee, and they would love the fact that then they own that document and they can do it, but they knew it was legally sufficient. So I was originally going to do that, was make a bunch of contracts and different things that people have, leases, independent contractor, client agreements, et cetera, and then just, you know, say, listen, these are not state-specific, these are general, but you're welcome to, you know, purchase them. So it sounds like maybe that's something I still should maybe pursue, and I certainly could start with you guys. I mean, I could probably create a document that would be sufficient enough, and would you and I could guide you if there's any state issues. But most contract issues are pretty much generic, and there are not a lot of state issues that come up in a general contract between you and your customers. Correct?
Well, and one of my clients who is no longer a practice attorney, but he's licensed, has spoken to us on contracts. And what his concern is, obviously with VAs, and Denise knows this, I'm in Chicago. I may have a client who's in California, so there may be some different state issues there. And obviously nobody wants to go to court. And for us, it's, you know, it's a lot of money to go to court since we're so small. But that's why I was looking at attorneys that are licensed in other states, so it won't just be, you know, it's somebody writing a contract in California. You know, it's not going to work in the state of Michigan. So that was kind of our concern, and that's why I've been kind of looking for attorneys, you know, in multiple states.
Right, right. Well, one thing that you should be aware of is a commercial contract really can be whatever you want, because really the courts envision the fact that two people who are entering into a commercial contract are sophisticated enough to know what they're entering into. So, for example, with my clients who have been in other states, I mean, we write the contract in Ohio, for example, and we put Ohio as the jurisdiction for any lawsuits, and you'll probably see that even now. Like when you sign up with any kind, like website, for example, website hosting, if you go down to the state in which it's going to be litigated, it will say, you know, Texas, and yet you're in, you know, Missouri. It doesn't really matter. And so, for example, in your case, you guys can put your own state as the jurisdiction, and your client will just have to accept that. In other words, if you sue them, you would sue them in Missouri, if you are in Missouri, and they would have to come to Missouri and defend themselves. So, that's a whole nother that could be a whole nother webinar on that. So, but the bottom line is, I mean, I certainly could find everybody lawyers in the different states, and maybe I need to do that as part of my program and service. But the other option is we could talk about this further, and I could probably develop something that you all could use, and then you could just make sure, you know, you could have your own, if you really felt like you needed the state law issues to be looked at, I could at least point you to the right direction for that.
That would be great, and you know, as Denise and I both know, nouveaux, and probably a lot of us are intimidated, you know, even calling an attorney or talking to an attorney. So that's another reason I've been looking for the contacts, and also to say, hey, here's a package. It's the contract, and you know what, if you need Michelle to point you in the right direction of state law and, you know, English terms, you know what, here's the deal. And yeah, the more we can help out our fellow VA colleagues, the better. Thank you.
Okay, no problem.
What I will do is at the end of the show, I will send you both an email that introduces you to each other.
Okay.
And gives the contact information. Y'all can talk about it after the show.
That would be great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sue. That was a great question. I'm so
Thanks,
glad
Sue.
That I caught you before we stopped streaming. Michelle, thank you so much for being with us. I mean, you have given us some great, great, great information, and I really appreciate it, and I know our audience does too.
I've really enjoyed it, so thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. Well, listen, thank you, everybody, for being here. The show will be available for download in probably about an hour. You can find us in iTunes. Just type in our names. And this is Denise Griffiths and Michelle Rea wishing you a wonderful weekend, and I will see you next week. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.